This is a London Undone podcast. My name is Catherine Cartwright. These podcasts give you an audible insight into some curious places around London. This series focuses on the historic and at times peculiar City of London churches, their histories, features, associations, and their spiritual lives. Walking up Bishopsgate from London Bridge and Gracechurch Street, you encounter Victorian buildings, which give way to post-war buildings, which then give way to 21st century skyscrapers, including the Heron Tower and the tallest of buildings in the city, under construction, 22 Bishopsgate, standing 58 stories high and not yet given a pet name, probably because it's so uninspiring. Tucked into this vision of modernity is the tiny church of St. Ethelburga's. You may remember St. Ethelburga from the All Hallows by the Tower podcast. She was a 7th century abbess who founded that church and also ran the Benedictine monastery at Barking. She was the sister of the then Bishop of London, Erkenwald. It's said he's the bishop who lends his name to the Bishop's Gate, the road on which the church stands. The Venerable Bede refers to her in his 8th century book, The Ecclesiastical History of the English People, and a 9th century book refers to a vision of a nun who saw Ethelburga being taken up to heaven in chains. She died of the plague while caring for plague victims in 664 AD. Stepping out of the noisy Bishopsgate Street and into this tiny church, which was first referenced in 1250, I met a church watcher called Michael Young.
I have been involved with the city churches for just over 20 years as a friend of the city churches, and I do church watching, as we refer to it, in different churches. I do it roughly once a week for about 45 weeks of the year. This church itself was built in the late medieval period. It survived both the fire of London, being to the northeast of the city, and also it survived the Blitz.
But it didn't survive
the IRA bombing in 1993.
Yeah.
And we've got a picture here. This is what the church looked like after the bombing.
It's pretty much gone.
What you can't see here is the tower. The tower survived. Towers tend to. If you see any pictures of London after the Blitz,
yeah,
it's the church towers,
yeah,
because they're
not
solid and they survive.
Yeah. What we're standing in now is a rectangular
nave.
But how much bigger would the church have been?
No, it wasn't any. This is the size of the church, the footprint. It had the one aisle, and that was it. It ended up at that point.
So it was a small church.
When it was first built, it would have been the largest building on Bishopsgate.
Really?
It is now the smallest building on Bishopsgate, and has been for quite a long time. But it only ever comprised the nave, the tower, and the aisle.
Yes, and looking at that picture that you just showed me from after the IRA bomb in the 1990s, it was just looked like a couple of walls filled with rubble. It really was terribly badly destroyed.
One day when I was watching here, a middle-aged man came in, and he was trying to orientate himself. And when I spoke to him, he said he was the first policeman to enter the building after the bombing, where they had to come in just to check that there was nobody
inside, in here
or any dead bodies or anything. And he wasn't from the City of London Police or even from Metropolitan Police. They had been drafted in. I think he was from Essex Police. And they were drafted into the city because they knew something was going to happen that day.
Yeah.
And we worked out that he must have walked through there, where the walked really? Through where the wall is now.
Wow. What happened after that bomb damage?
There was a lot of controversy about what should happen to this church. There was the option one, of course, was demolish it and sell the site. Not a cheap bit of land, this. In the heart of the city. And that actually was taken right to the House of Lords. But the case for demolition was lost in the House of Lords. The final decision, after much, much debate, was that it would be rebuilt as a centre for reconciliation and peace. And although obviously the Diocese of London and the then Bishop of London, Richard Charteris, he and the diocese were very keen that it should be kept, and there was an architectural competition as to what should happen to it. The winning entry wasn't the one that was finally done, and in due course the money was raised, and the decision to make it a centre for peace rather than as a church.
So today services aren't held here?
Occasionally services are held here. It is basically for people of all religions and none. And it's used principally as a gathering place now, but there are occasional services held here, non-denominational Christian or a totally non-denominational, so that we've got Muslim and Buddhist, Hindu. Total multi-faith community use.
The only thing that might indicate that this would be used as worship is a font in the corner, and there are a couple of memorials on the wall, but really not many.
The memorials that survived. Yeah. The font survived. That is a Tudor font.
It's from here. And
yes, it was. You can see in that picture it's lying there. It survived, as did the bell in the belfry. That survived. And that is now there, and that's a bell that rings the hours. Still rings, yes. And as much as of the rubble and everything that was available was used. In fact, the window, the east window, which you don't get the full effect at the moment because it's boarded up and that's artificial lighting because of building work going on next door. But that is St. Ethelburga. It's a modern window, and it does include many pieces of the stained glass that was in previous windows, particularly her train. The train is all made up of fragments of glass that were rescued from the rubble.
You can see it.
Yeah.
The large windows dominated by an image of St. Ethelburga striding to the left as you look at it. Her robes that Michael mentioned billowing behind her. On the floor in front of her is a hazel bush, shedding leaves and fruit, apparently a symbol of peace and reconciliation. As well as fragments of the window being reused here, other parts of the rubble were made use of in this church too.
The lectern and the communion table, they were made from the roof timbers. Mm-hmm. And there is a cross on the communion table.
Yeah.
The lighting's not very good.
But that
cross, if you have a look at it closely, you can see that it is made from
nails.
And that was a gift from the people of Coventry Cathedral, because Coventry Cathedral also rose from the ashes, and that was a gift to the church.
Coventry Cathedral's Community of the Cross of Nails is an organisation for reconciliation. Other features of the church were completely destroyed in the bomb. Much of it was the 19th century additions by Ninian Compter.
It's very clear coming into this space what's old and what's new. They've made that clear, haven't they?
Yes, you can see what survived and what is new, and you can externally as well.
Yeah.
Yes, it is all quite clear that this is new and or certainly reused materials, and something else. This is just all brick behind this.
Yeah, that's so the northern bit is a brand new, modern, simple white wall. The roof has got sort of steel
supports.
And then on the left hand, on the southern side, you have got these medieval arches, and then the entrance way looks older.
That's the base of the tower, which has been repaired rather than rebuilt.
Yeah.
This is a totally different building to any of the other city churches that we watch in. It stands for something that is totally different to what the other churches stand for. Because the other churches, for the most part, not exclusive, but for the most part, are still very much worshipping churches. This isn't. This is used for totally different purpose, but still with some form of a religious base, even though it's not a Christian. A little side point is that the memorial, the stone in the corner, Ken watches the odd steps, is to a former incumbent of this church, John Meadows Rodwell. He was a rector here for 57 years.
A long time.
You don't get them that long.
1843 to 1900.
Yeah. And he was the first, he published the first reliable version of the Quran in English.
Isn't that interesting?
So there's always been a wider link in this church.
To different faiths.
Yes.
Thank you for showing me that. They built in the sort of the new bit on the south aisle, a mezzanine level, and it looks like there are offices up there.
Well,
so
they're
it's
the
used.
They're the offices of the people that administer this church.
The offices house the Centre for Peace and Reconciliation. This centre is, in their own words from their website, a maker of peacemakers. We inspire and equip people from all backgrounds to become peace builders in their own communities and lives.
You mentioned earlier the garden. Can you take
me
to the garden?
Yes,
shall we have a look to see what's there?
This is the garden.
So we come out into the garden, and I sat here a few years ago and there was nothing around us, and now they're building a skyscraper right next door to the church.
There always has been a garden here. There was a churchyard, of course, in the past, and this has been done since even since we've been watching here. They have done the garden, and there's a row, I'm not sure which one, I think it's that one, is the peace rose. It was created especially for this centre, by horticulturists. And I've always loved that inscription, yesterday's foe is today's friend.
Clearly, lots of different people from around the world use this as a place for reconciliation and to show that that's the way forward, I suppose. It would be peaceful if they weren't doing the building work next door. But in this, there's another section of the garden here, which is
where
going
they...
through. You want to go through a wooden door, which is see-through, and it takes us after you, and it takes us into a yurt. Is it?
Show you it, because otherwise you've got to take shoes. Well, I've got to take my shoes off.
Oh right, can
you
I take mine
in?
Off as well?
The windows show the word peace in all the different languages.
So this yurt is a place for people to come and relax and to sort of be peaceful, and it's a meditative space.
Yes.
But it's totally unexpected, isn't it? You don't kind of come into the city and expect to see a yurt.
Yeah, no, not in the least. No. And this was paid for by people from predominantly it was Morocco, but also from the Lebanon and various other right. Middle Eastern and North African right. nations.
And it has that North African feel to it, yes, with the lanterns yes. and the yeah. material wrapped around the outside.
Yeah, yes.
As I went back through the church, I saw another feature which highlights its international reach. It was a large quilt made by Funiko Nakayama. It's called Peoples of the World, showing about 40 different figures on panels. Each panel is a double-sided embroidered blouse from Panama, called a mola, and the figures are shown in bright reds and yellows. It's in the cloister at the back if you want to find it. All the city churches are little sanctuaries of peace and quiet amidst the raging capitalism that surrounds them. But this one, since its reopening after the IRA bomb, has a mission to bring about peace. And walking into this medieval church of St. Ethelburga and then into the garden of the yurt at the back, peace prevails, regardless of the skyscrapers that loom over it.